Blog Talk Radio.
Joining me this morning. We've been off for a couple weeks, but we are back and at it today, ready to rock and roll. You are listening to Conservative Cauldron Radio. I am Becky Noble. Again, thank you for chilling with me on this Friday morning, TGIF. The weekend is here, people. Hope you are going to have some lovely weather in your neck of the woods, wherever you are. I think we are gonna have some pretty good weather here in St. Louis, but we've got a lot to get to today, as always, and I hope I can get to it all. We're going to be hearing from Conservative Cauldron Radio political analyst and former congressional candidate Martin Baker later on his thoughts about Super Tuesday, Mitt Romney, which, of course, we'll be talking about, and, you know, just some other stuff in general. I want to tell a story real quickly why we were not on air last week. I was attending the annual Missouri Lincoln Reagan Days convention here that was held here in St. Louis last weekend. And quick story before we get into everything, it was really kind of cool. I got to meet former Missouri Attorney General, former Missouri Governor, former Missouri Senator, former Attorney General of the United States, John Ashcroft, and I got to tell you, he's an amazing man, first of all. And, you know, I don't know if people remember a whole lot. He was George Bush's first attorney general. And he caught a lot of flack from people because of his faith. The media tried to portray him as a, you know, Bible-thumping, everybody's going to hell, prude, you know, just mean, nasty kind of guy. And I got to tell you, nothing could be further from the truth. He was a lovely, warm, just the nicest, sweetest man you could ever want to meet. And we talked for about 10 minutes, and he was asking me a lot of questions about blogging. And it was really kind of surreal because we talked about a few other things as well. And it was really kind of surreal because as we were talking and I was answering all of his questions, I thought to myself, the former Attorney General of the United States of America is asking me, who the hell am I, about blogging. And it was such an honor to meet him. And it was really the high point of the weekend for me. And so it was just a really cool thing. It was as soon as I thought of it, I thought about coming on air this week and telling the story about meeting former Attorney General John Ashcroft, because he was just really, again, just the nicest, sweetest man you'd ever want to meet. And once again, as usual, the media got it wrong on him as well, like they do pretty much. But we got a lot to get into today, and I'm loaded for bear once again, as usual. I hope I've got time to get to everything. Do my best, and we will we'll jump in and get to as much as we can here. But of course, I guess everybody knows last night that the 11th Republican presidential debate was last night in Detroit, and it was hosted by Fox News. The moderators, once again, were Megyn Kelly, Chris Wallace, and Bret Baier. And, you know, online, prior to this debate, there was a lot of – in fact, I saw a petition being circled, and last I saw – the number was roughly around 60,000 people that had signed this online petition that they did not want Megyn Kelly moderating this debate because of her past behavior and the thought by a lot of people that she is, well, that she's not fair and balanced. And but she was there nonetheless, and she and Donald Trump got along famously, and there was some tense moments here and there because I don't think that even the most rabid Donald Trump supporters are not going to say, sure, throw him the tough questions, don't throw him softballs, and she did just that. And but you know, when I really had no desire to watch this debate, to tell you the truth, because first of all, I think there have been too many. Even last election cycle when we had, what, 25 or go, enough with the debates already. And so now they this time around, they pared it down to, I believe, 12. I believe we have one more to go. And even that is too many. I would pare it down to an even 10 maybe, and maybe spread them out a little bit more and leave it at that. Because one of the big reasons that I didn't want to watch it, that I really had no desire to watch it, was that it just seemed like it was more of the same. And I think that as we get further and further into the primary season, that people are going to have their minds made up. Sure, you're always going to have your wafflers and fence sitters and people who don't decide until the very last minute. That's always going to be there. But, you know, the other thing, too, was that it's just a little too much. I mean, seriously, how much debating can you do, you know, before people will have their minds made up? But the other thing, too, and it goes back to previous debates and all of the things that have been going on within the GOP, is that I didn't want to watch it because it was just going to be more of the same. It was just going to be more of Donald Trump, Ted Cruz, Marco Rubio, calling each other liars and calling each other names, and just the constant mudslinging and the back and forth. And as somebody who is attuned to politics and is a watcher of politics, I get that that's all part of the gig. Just seems like for even the most hardened political watchers this time around, this election cycle, it's just really it's even too much almost for them. And you know, even to the point where Marco Rubio last week had made some sort of comment about how Donald Trump called him small all the time in related to stature, and I'm paraphrasing, and he went on to say something to the effect of, well, yes, he's taller than I am, but look how small his hands are, and you know what they say about men with small hands. And so it came up pretty early on last night that we had to hear Donald Trump, since this is a family show, talk about his anatomy. You know, did any of us ever think that you would sit and watch a presidential debate where you want them to talk about the issues that affect the American people? But before we do that, we're going to talk about anatomy. Really? And it just seemed like, and I can't believe that a lot of other people aren't thinking this too, that it just really, yeah, the mudslinging is bad, but that just really, it really dropped the thing even further into the gutter, even further into the basement. And but I have a great piece here today, kind of an analytical. I don't really have a lot of sound bites from this. To tell you the truth, I really didn't want a lot of sound bites, because again, it was just more of the same. We've heard it all before. And I also can't believe that there's not a segment of voters who are thinking that it is more of the same, more of what we've seen in the last, what, two or three debates now, pretty much full on. And because it is more of the same, that it could very well be turning them off and kind of pushing them away. But so this is a great piece here today from The Hill, and it's kind of giving an overview of things and giving an overview of winners and losers. And I don't know that anybody, just my own personal observations, I don't know that anybody had a better night than anyone else. Actually, I think, and a lot of people are saying this today, that maybe Ohio Governor John Kasich had the best night because he wasn't down in the mud. And I've heard him described this morning by a lot of people who said he was the only adult in the room. And that was kind of the feeling I got too. Like I said, everybody really, there weren't good nights, there weren't bad nights. Donald Trump, of course, the whole thing with the hands and all of that. And that was just, you know, I just rolled my eyes. I just thought, is this where we're at? Is this really where we're at? But he also commented on a speech that former governor and former Republican presidential nominee Mitt Romney gave about Donald Trump yesterday, and we're going to talk about that more a little bit later because, just as a teaser, I think that Mitt Romney will have been instrumental in the it's kind of an assisted suicide now of the Republican Party, and he would be the assisting. But we'll get to that a little bit more later. But again, he made some comments about the speech that Mitt Romney had gave about him yesterday. He also went on to say that he had softened his position on immigration, and that could kind of be a run-up to the general election, that right now you're preaching to the choir and you do want to lean pretty hard right. But once the general election rolls around, in order to garner those people who are in the middle, that maybe he has softened his position a little bit, which is interesting given the fact that this was really kind of his signature issue. And but that he was pretty much all in on enhanced interrogation techniques. And one of the things it says here in this report from the Hill is that Trump is quick on his feet, and he is. And he can say a lot of things to his rivals, and what may be a death knell for someone else, it doesn't really seem to doesn't faze him. And at one point, even said it last night. It just seemed like that the bickering and the mudslinging and all of it that just went, it especially with the whole hands thing, just kind of took things to a whole different level. Excuse me. And even at one point, Chris Wallace said, the quote here from him was, gentlemen, you've got to do better than this. And I think there are a lot of people today that are probably agreeing with him. And early on last night, the debate was pretty heated, but it kind of leveled out a little bit. And of course, there were focus groups about the whole thing. Frank Luntz is usually the focus group guru here. And a lot of people that were in his focus group last night, apparently the question was something to the effect of what were their thoughts about this debate. And some of the words that came up were embarrassing, childish, sophomoric, disgusting, and including someone who was a former aide to former Texas Governor Rick Perry, former aide to his presidential campaign, tweeted out that his party was, quote, committing suicide on national television. And again, I think there's some truth to that, and we'll get to that a little bit later. But Ted Cruz had a good night. Again, Donald Trump didn't have a bad night, but I don't know that it was outstanding. And I think the same goes for Ted Cruz and Marco Rubio. They didn't have bad nights, but I didn't think that there was anything overtly outstanding. Ted Cruz has made the case that he's the only candidate by virtue of his winning some primaries on Super Tuesday. He was victorious in Texas and, of course, in his home state and a few other places. We're going to also get to that, too, in a little bit. But making the case that because of that, he is the only one that can beat Donald Trump. And he was consistent on hammering Trump for his history of donating to Democrats and supporting liberal causes. And but again, he did well. But again, I didn't think that there was anything really overtly outstanding. The Hill goes on to say, and I would agree with this, that it was a performance that could help Cruz cement the notion in the minds of some conservatives that he's the best hope for the anti-Trump crowd. And, that's another big, huge, looming question here, regardless of who the nominee is here, whether it is Donald Trump or Ted Cruz or even Marco Rubio, is this party going to be able to coalesce around any of these nominees and have a little bit of unity to it? And right now, I think that's kind of up in the air. But we are joined right now by former congressional candidate here in Missouri, Martin Baker. He is our resident political analyst. Hey, Martin, what's going on?
Hi, Becker.
What's up? Did you get to see any of the debate last night?
I saw parts of it, and seemed yesterday was a very interesting day for us as a party. It really defined us once again as the party that split more ways than the law should ever allow.
Yeah. Definitely.
It also, the other thing that you didn't see was Hillary Clinton sitting there with a big bag of popcorn, happily watching it all.
Oh, yeah. I would agree with that. Yeah. I would agree, definitely. So
it never ceases to amaze
me. Right. I know. So kind of what are your thoughts on last night, on what happened?
Here is my thought, and I can use the same analogy for the remark made by Governor Romney as well, is that finally things are needing to be said about Trump are being said. However, at this juncture, it is counterproductive by the point that it just makes everyone seem like, well, why is everybody dumping and bagging on Donald Trump? He must be saying something right. And all it does is it just increases his popularity. And
that's
all
true.
This is going to do is lead us towards a fractured convention. We are still a long way from the delegate count being the delegate count is still up in the air. Still very much
right.
Up in the air.
No right.
One is even close to that magic number.
That's true. I'm sorry, go ahead.
In the interim, what we have to do is we have to come to a realization, and it's a very scary realization of how we are going to move forward as a party. Should Donald Trump become our nominee? Going to spell the end of the GOP, which everyone is predicting. Should Donald Trump become our nominee, or are we going to put on the happy face and hold our nose and make that vote for Trump in the event to stop Hillary Clinton?
Right. And I think you have so many people who are there's a faction of people who are saying, I'm sick and tired of holding my nose, therefore I'm not ever going to vote for Donald Trump ever in my lifetime. But then there's the other faction of people who say, well, if you don't, then you're essentially electing Hillary Clinton. So yeah, it's a very fractured party at this time. It really is. So what did you think? That any thoughts you have maybe on what happened Tuesday? Donald
my
Trump
thoughts
was
are
successful.
No, he was very successful in the open primary states. In the closed primary states, he didn't
right.
do so hot. And this is again with like the same momentum that 4 years ago that we saw with like the Ron Paul candidate, with the Ron Paul candidacy. You saw that Congressman Paul did quite well in those open primary and caucus states where you bring in more people and I win. And that's how this works. Is that when you've got someone who is a truly, absolutely, for lack of a better phrase, declared and dyed-in-the-wool Republican, they won't give Donald Trump a second look. But in those states where you don't really have to claim a party allegiance, where you really don't have to declare your Republican bona fides, Donald Trump was very successful. And this is
right.
This is truly indicative of where we are as a political society, is that our political society is now shifting more from the let's talk about the issues, but let's see if this name can run farther than yours. And that's what we've become.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think so. what do you kind of see here going forward here? Now, we've got about, I think it's 8 states tomorrow that have primaries and caucuses, and I think that 4 of them, I could be mistaken, but 4 of them are closed primary states, which means that only registered Republicans can vote on those states. And personally, I think that it's going to be interesting to see what the numbers are going to be like for something like that. What do you think?
Well, I agree with you on that one, because we're now getting to the turn. Well, while everybody, you know, tried to say that, you know, Super Tuesday is going to be your major measure of where things are going to go, what we also have to understand, again, like we just said, closed primary states are going to go solidly for what we want to call those constitutional conservatives, where they're going
right.
to lean more towards Rubio. They're going to lean more towards Cruz. They're going to actually even, in black, they're even going to lean a little bit towards Kasich, because at least Kasich has a proven record of some sort, good, bad, or indifferent. They all have a record
right.
of legislation. Donald Trump does not. And again, Donald Trump does not, good, bad, or indifferent, does not fit your textbook mode of constitutional conservative, especially when he said things such as he will force the military to take actions, which, of course, constitutionally he cannot. But that's
right.
a different story within itself.
Right. Yeah. And, well, and another thing, too, is last night during the debate that a couple of the moderators, I know I heard Chris Wallace say at least one time, but that's unconstitutional, and he glossed right over it and kept going. But
of course he did, because he's been allowed to do that. In you look at the track record of someone like Trump, who is used to having his way. He's in charge in the boardroom. He was in charge on his show. So it's all about his ability to take charge in a room. While that is very great on the presidential level, because you want to have a candidate that is going to be able to say, you want the president to not be afraid. You want the president to come in and take over. And,
right.
and know that this is the leader of the free world. This is the man who is going to, if need be, lead us into battle in the manner that some candidates are doing so. I would have zero confidence as Donald Trump as a commander in chief. He will not bind himself with a change of the Constitution. He will, if we think that the executive orders that Barack Obama are using now are crazy enough, imagine imagine the executive orders that he's going to bring out.
That's true. That was kind of be my next question. As a former member of the military, what are your thoughts on somebody like Donald Trump being your commander in chief?
Cringeworthy is I think the best word that I could utilize.
I can see where that might be true. Yeah, I can see that. But we mentioned Mitt Romney a little bit and mentioned his speech a little bit yesterday. What did you think about that?
I'm going to say it again. While it was very necessary, while it was very great of Mitt Romney to finally come out and say it, here's the thing, is that what it gives the perception right now of Governor Romney is, oh, well, and we're familiar with this one, is that all they're going to say is that, well, Mitt Romney, you lost. Mitt, you can scream
right.
all you want. I was the nominee. We're very familiar with that phrase.
Yeah, yes, we are.
But Mitt was not the person that needed to say that. You needed the average voter to say some of these things. You needed someone who has a record of, I hate to say it this way, but a record of winning to say
right.
that. And again, all it did was it gave Donald Trump a whole lot more ammo to say, see, the whole world's against me. It's us against the world, people, so we've got to stop them.
That's true.
It's again going to be – go ahead, Beck.
People love an underdog, and that's going to
yeah, –
you're right there.
Do.
It's only going to attract more people to him. But a lot of people were saying, too, well – you know, where was all this fight and all this gumption 4 years ago when Mitt Romney could have used all of this energy against Barack Obama? because a lot of people say that's an election that should have been won.
I agree with you on that one. But here's our problem that we have, is that when you have a party that is afraid to truly engage the first black president in history, so it
Very
wasn't
true.
All on Mitt Romney. It was not all on Mitt Romney. I'm not just saying as the nominee, as the standard bearer of the party, you have a responsibility to conduct and comport yourself, and you've helped sense the direction that the party is going to go during election season. If he would have been a little bit more confrontational on certain matters of policy and principle, I think this election could have been won. But you also have to have a party that's willing to go that direction. The Republican Party 4 years ago still, and even to this day, is still afraid to engage Barack Obama. They are afraid to engage
his
policy.
Right.
For fear of saying, well, that's racist. We can't do that. No, it's constitutionally prudent. I love the parliamentary procedure of the UK. Is the party that's not in power is always called Her Majesty's Loyal Opposition. Where is the loyal opposition of the Republican Party today? Where's the loyal opposition?
Exactly. You're not seeing it. They're hiding under a rock somewhere. You're right. There's no opposition.
They're doing a lot of hiding.
There's no opposition, and they've made it clear that there won't be.
No, there won't be because of the fact that as long as we have a president who has that shade of color that he has. Now, I wonder. I'm just using this for hypothetics. Would you have the same principle if there was a Ben Carson presidency? Would you have the same principle if, for lack of a better phrase, if Cory Booker on the Democrat side were to become the next president? Is that same is Ben Carson or the Cory Booker or anybody else or a female, are they going to get that same carte blanche that Barack Obama got because they were the first? Now what about the second one or the third or the first female or the first Hispanic or the first – Well, the first Wiccan, are they going to get that same special treatment because of the fact that they're not
exactly?
And are we going? Is that our precedent? Is this our precedent now? When you're the first at something, you get a blank check to do whatever you want, and nobody can talk to you about that wrong. It's a scary
exactly.
Precedent.
You're absolutely right. I was just going to say that. Yeah. What happens? God forbid, if Hillary Clinton is the first female president, or even had it been Carly Fiorina, does she get the same? Well, I think probably a Democrat, be they the whatever Hispanic woman, pick one. I think that they would probably get that same hands off kind of treatment. But if you're a Republican, no way. It's going to be everything's fair game and everything. You know, do what you want to do, but. Well, it's going to be interesting to see what happens tomorrow, especially with the closed primary states and going forth from there on March 15th. You have Ohio and Florida and Missouri and Illinois and a lot of other key states that it's going to be interesting to see. And I don't know. Let me ask you real quick, and then I got to let you go. Is Missouri a closed primary state?
Technically, yes, it is. Because Missouri is a state that you do not have to declare a political allegiance,
mm-hmm.
you can essentially, a Democrat, for example, using an example, Lacey Clay could go pick up a Republican ballot if he so chose to.
Okay.
However, that now disqualifies him from voting in the Democratic presidential primary. So you pick one or
okay.
the other.
Okay. Real sure how it worked, but I knew you would be. Anyway, it's going to be interesting to see what happens. But thanks, Martin, so much for coming on and giving us your thoughts.
Thanks for having me on.
And your analysis about what's going to happen in the next couple of weeks or so. Thanks so much for being on, Martin.
Thanks, Beck.
Okay, talk to you later. Thank you. That was, of course, Martin Baker, former congressional candidate here in Missouri in the 1st Congressional District. And political analyst for Conservative Cauldron Radio, giving us his thoughts on the happenings of this week, the debate last night and Super Tuesday and going forward from there. But I went long here because we were talking to Martin, but I'm going to take a break here and we will be back shortly. You know, another thing that is going on this week, We lost a great man in the conservative movement 4 years ago this past Tuesday, March the 1st, and that would be Andrew Breitbart. He was fearless. He was in your face. He did things and he said things that prior to him being on the scene, nobody did. And we've got to wonder, I think, what would Andrew Breitbart be thinking about this election cycle right now? What would he have to say about Donald? What would he have to say about all the infighting going on in the GOP? It would be, he would have some definite opinions. And going into my commercial break here, commercial break, music break, whatever you want to call it, going into the break here, we're going to hear a little bit from Andrew Breitbart. You're listening to Conservative Cauldron Radio. You're listening to your host, Becky Noble. And I will be right back. Thanks for hanging around. Don't go anywhere.
What is wrong out there? We have done nothing wrong other than to do what they have done for years, and that is protest. And they think that we should sit down and shut up, and that is ending right now.
Barack Obama is a radical. We should not be afraid to say that.
We have an obligation to fight back.
When he was at Harvard, he was advocating for the worst of the worst to join the faculty.
Are you insane? Are you so, if your ideology is so strong that when Acorn in almost every office except for one, are you so insane that they help them create 501c3s and say, for this underage Mike Madden, for this underage prostitution ring where we're going to get these 14-year-old girls, it's called sex slavery, you're supposed to be liberal and care about this shit.
Some guidance to help me find the cure.
We're back. You're listening to Conservative Cauldron Radio. I am Becky Noble, TGIF. The weekend is upon us. Thank you all so much for hanging out with me today. We've got tons and tons of stuff to get to, as always. We were talking about last night's GOP debate, which was, you know, to me anymore, it's nothing but a giant food fight. It's just insults back and forth and name calling and you're a liar and no, you're a liar. And I really had no desire to watch it, but I did. Well, I did because my husband wanted to watch it, but it's just more of the same. And we've been talking a little bit about Mitt Romney's speech against Donald Trump yesterday. We're going to get to a little bit more of that, too, in a minute. But I got some poll numbers here, of course. Now, these would be from prior to last night's debate. And, again, this is a real clear politics average poll. And nationally, right now, Donald Trump is at 35.6%, Ted Cruz 19.8%, and Marco Rubio at 17.4%. Now, the states that are having primaries and caucuses tomorrow, Kansas is having a caucus, Kentucky is having a GOP caucus, Louisiana, the Democrats are caucusing in Nebraska, the Republicans are caucusing in Hawaii. They are also caucusing in Idaho, Mississippi, and Michigan. So there's eight states there. And again, as we were talking to a former congressional candidate here in Missouri and political analyst for Conservative Cauldron Radio, Martin Baker, just prior to the break, I believe that of these eight states, four of them are closed primary states, which means that only registered Republicans are able to vote in those primaries. So it'll be interesting numbers-wise to see what happens with Donald Trump, to see if he does as well as he did on Super Tuesday. And a lot of those states that he did so well in and that he won on Super Tuesday were open primary states, which means anybody can vote. Democrats can cross over and vote in those. So given those facts, right now today in Louisiana, Donald Trump leads at 42.5%. Ted Cruz, 23.5%, and Marco Rubio, 15%. In Michigan, Donald Trump, 33.7%, Marco Rubio, 18.3%, and Ted Cruz, 17%. So aside from Donald Trump, it's pretty close between Cruz and Rubio. And so that'll be interesting to see what happens there. Now, looking ahead to March the 15th, I believe, well, Florida is, let's see, who else is March the 15th. I have my list right here. Tuesday, March 15th, Florida, Illinois, Missouri, North Carolina, and Ohio. So looking ahead to those states, right now today in Florida, Marco Rubio's home state, Donald Trump is at 44.7, Marco Rubio 26, and Ted Cruz 12.3. In North Carolina, Donald Trump 29.8, Cruz 19.5, Marco Rubio 17.5. In Illinois, Trump 33, Rubio 17.5, Cruz 15.5. And again, in Illinois, it's a little bit closer. But on the other side here, nationally, Hillary Clinton is up 49.6 to Bernie Sanders 40%. In Louisiana, Hillary Clinton, 60.5, Bernie Sanders, 21.5. In Michigan, Hillary Clinton, 55, Sanders, 37.3. You've got a lot of union people in Michigan. In Florida, Hillary Clinton, 57, Bernie Sanders, 32.8. North Carolina, Clinton, 51.6, Bernie Sanders, 33. In North Carolina, well, not only in North Carolina, but also in Mississippi, Hillary Clinton, 62.5, Bernie Sanders, 18.5. Hillary Clinton is going to garner a lot of the minority vote, and you're going to have a large minority vote in North Carolina and Mississippi. So those are the numbers right now going forward. But again, as we were talking before the break, you know, not just regarding last night's debate, but also during the primary election season here, it's, you know, the establishment, the GOP establishment is got to be beyond panic at this point, because they don't understand. They continue to fail to understand, whether it's because they choose not to or because they really don't. They do not see, either they do not or they will not see why people are attracted to Donald Trump, and they're doing what they want to do, what they feel like they need to do to try to stop him, whether that ends up being a brokered convention in July, whether that means bringing in someone to run as a third party, whether it means bringing in someone else like a Mitt Romney, not to run as third party, but just to run. It's all options are out on the table for them at this point, because what they want to do, the ultimate goal for the establishment wing of the GOP is to stop Donald Trump. And this is from, don't remember where it's from. This is a report here from, Wednesday, I'm sorry, of this week. And it's talking about just that there's division in the Republican Party, the likes of which we have not seen in decades, probably since the 60s. And the establishment doesn't like Ted Cruz either. And the reason they don't like Ted Cruz is because he is consistent and because he is unwavering. Now, whether or not there is any belief among the establishment that because he is not a self-funder like Donald Trump is, that he could be controlled in some way through money or the lack of it, you know, that could be. But one of the things it says here is that Donald Trump is going to have to do a little bit better in these upcoming primaries if he's going to claim the nomination prior to July. So far, he's won 46% of the delegates awarded, and he'd have to increase that to 52 in the remaining primaries. And, you know, our civil war here within the Republican Party is contrasting sharply here with the Democrats, and the fact that they are, yeah, Bernie Sanders is still getting the crowds, and he's still being awarded delegates, but there's more and more people coalescing around Hillary Clinton. And, you know, it's been the belief since day one that she's going to be the presumptive nominee. And while it's good, I think, that Donald Trump has won in really politically opposite places like Massachusetts and Alabama, and because of his being viewed as being an outsider. And so that, I think that is when people see that, that is also, you know, impacting a little bit of voter turnout. And also, along with his home state of Texas, Ted Cruz won in Oklahoma and Alaska on Tuesday. Marco Rubio took the Minnesota caucuses. So those top three guys, John Kasich is holding out for Ohio, his home state. And I think that you are going to see he will have to make a decision one way or another after Ohio. And we'll see what happens in Ohio. Again, that is, I believe, March 15th. But, you know, there's a lot of people who are saying that because of their hatred for Donald Trump and, you know, Lindsey Graham is no, he may be a Republican, but he's no conservative, is even saying, you know, Ted Cruz is not my favorite guy, but it may come to a point where we have to rally around him just in order to stop Trump. So they're trying to do whatever they're doing what they have to do to stop Donald Trump from getting this primary. And again, all options for them are out on the table. I am going to take another quick break. We ran long in the first segment talking to Martin, but it was all worth it. And I'm going to take a quick break here. We will be right back. There is a little bit of stuff going on at CPAC this year, the Conservative Political Action Conference that is held every year in Washington, D.C. It is still killing me that I am not there this year. It's a fun, fun time, but gosh, Washington, D.C., love you, Washington, D.C., but you're an expensive place. Anyway, I'm going to take a break. We're going to talk about that, and we've got a few more things to cover before we wrap it up for the day. And, of course, going into our break, we're going to hear a little bit more from, this is a little bit of an interview that our buddy Wayne Dupree over at NewsNinja2012.com did with the amazing and the irreplaceable. He's been gone 4 years ago this past Tuesday. It's hard to believe. Here's a little bit as we go to a break of our buddy Wayne Dupree interviewing the great Andrew Breitbart. Don't go anywhere. I'll be right back.
What I want to be known as the guy who was awakened from a sleepwalking liberalism by a man by the name of Clarence Thomas, who stood there in a dignified manner as they tried to destroy him, yet he wasn't destroyed. And I want the Democratic Party and liberalism, I want my professors at Tulane and in the humanities department to know that they tried to brainwash me to side with liberal Democrats in order to attack those that disagreed. And I want my legacy to be that they know that they screwed with the wrong guy. In the United States of America, you have the right to think freely. You have the right to be whatever you want in this United States. And the idea that the Democrat media complex would tell you that you are a slave to an ideology, to a mindset, that if you don't abide by it, we're going to punish you severely, that's as un-American as anything that I can possibly imagine. I don't care if you would agree with me or disagree with me on policy. What I care about is that you have the freedom in this country to live your life as a free, rugged individualist. And I am at war with anybody that would tell you that you don't have a right to be a free man.
Andrew Breitbart, thank you, man,
thank
for
you.
Being here with me today.
Thank you.
You can live in a mansion. You can live in a tent, make your home on a houseboat, or an apartment that you rent. You can live in the suburbs, commute to work downtown, or you can be a farmer, earn your living from the ground. Be a broker on Wall Street, sell food from a cart, or you can be a rock star with a record on the charts. You can even drive a race car, pretty cool if you don't crash. Or you can work in a diner, slinging corned beef hash. At the end of the day, we're all the same. We're all the same, that's what I say, that's what I say. At the end of the day, that's what I say. College degree. You could even be a lawyer, entering a fee. You can go to China, and you can even go to France, or sit on the sidelines if you don't care to dance. At the end of the day, we're all the same. We're all the same. That's what I say. And that's what I say. At the end of the day, we're all the same. That's what I say. Well, play.
We're back. You're listening to Conservative Cauldron Radio. I am Becky Noble. Thank you, everybody, for joining me today. TGIF, the weekend is here, people. I know sometimes it seems like it's never going to happen, but it is. It's Friday, and we are talking about a lot of stuff, debates and Super Tuesday and upcoming caucuses and debates tomorrow. And, you know, everybody knows about CPAC, the Conservative Political Action Conference that goes on every year in Washington, D.C. I was lucky enough to go last year, and it's if you ever get a chance to go, it's an expensive trip, but it is amazing. It's maybe life-changing, seems melodramatic, but if you're a conservative, I think that's a good description. It really is life-changing. There's amazing people there that you can meet and talk to. But this year, this is a report from the Politico. Conservatives are furious that the Conservative Political Action Conference is allowing Donald Trump, yes, Donald Trump, to address the rank and file on Saturday, tomorrow. Many have ramped up 11th-hour efforts to try to get the Republican presidential frontrunner booted from the event being held in National Harbor, Maryland. Politico says a, quote, top aide, unquote, to Senator Marco Rubio has gone as far as charge the event's organizers with being, quote, being in the tank for Trump and clearing the way for his acceptance into mainstream conservatism, unquote. The movement against Trump's CPAC appearance comes on the heels of the extraordinary press conference Thursday by Mitt Romney, who denounced the billionaire developer as, quote, a phony and a fraud. Trump's upcoming CPAC appearance comes amid reports he donated $100,000 to the annual political conference of conservative activists. His campaign manager, Corey Lewandowski, told Politico that while the real estate tycoon has donated to CPAC over the years, quote, nothing was asked for in return this time around. You know, rumors are going to be floated. One of the big things that happened this week, happened yesterday, was this press conference, this speech given by Mitt Romney, where he basically said, well, one of the quotes here is from Governor Romney is, quote, let me put it plainly, if we Republicans choose Donald Trump as our nominee, the prospects for a safe and prosperous future are greatly diminished. He went on to say, quote, after all, this is an individual who mocked a disabled reporter, who attributed a reporter's questions to her menstrual cycle, who mocked a brilliant rival who happened to be a woman due to her appearance, who bragged about his marital affairs, and who laces his public speeches with vulgarity. Well, you know, right now Mitt Romney is Mitt Romney private citizen, and he is certainly entitled to an opinion technically right now, yes, he's Mitt Romney private citizen, but he's also Mitt Romney former presidential candidate, former governor of Massachusetts, so he's going to make public appearances, and so that's fine too, but I have two questions. One of them I have not heard from anyone. My question is, did he feel compelled to do this on his own? Was this press conference, was this speech, was this all his own idea? Or is this just another, you know, I think we can all figure out that Mitt Romney is probably we can be 95 to 99% sure that Mitt Romney is an establishment kind of guy. Did his establishment buddies put him up to this? And the other thing I think that we all want to know is, where was all of this? And I asked this of Martin Baker earlier in the show. Excuse me. Where was all of this fight 4 years ago when he could have taken on Barack Obama in that third debate before the 2012 presidential campaign about Benghazi? He could have taken him on then. But again, as Martin so brilliantly said, this party is so afraid of being called a racist, and so they're so afraid of being called racist and so afraid of taking on the first black president that they don't do it. And it's, you know, it's really interesting how so many people, and again, I'm not a Donald Trump supporter. I have my favorites going on right now, but I am not publicly endorsing anyone. But it seems like that there are a whole lot of people with a whole lot of fight right now against Donald Trump. Where was all of their spunk, and where was all of their energy, and where was all of their fight 4 years ago? I think that that's a valid question, and it's one that needs to be asked. And it's one, quite frankly, that needs to be asked of Mitt Romney. I would love to hear his answer to that. But, you know, I'm not going to hold my breath because, you know, establishment guys don't seem to, well, again, this is a family show. They don't seem to have a lot of, shall we say, cojones. But very quickly, before I get out of here. When a New Mexico convenience store was broken into, police say security footage showed the man leaving money in the till instead of taking off with all the cash. WTLV reported that according to the Las Cruces, New Mexico Police Department, Ellis Batista and another man had originally arrived at Bradley's convenience store to purchase cigarettes late Sunday night. While the convenience store is normally open 24 hours a day, Batista and friend found the clerk off duty in the store locked. Purchasing cigarettes from the 24-hour Walgreens across the street, witnesses saw Batista aggressively pounding on the door before finally kicking and breaking the door, WTLV reported. Store surveillance cameras then showed the suspect entering the store and grabbing a pack of cigarettes, cops say. Instead of leaving immediately, the good-natured suspect reportedly left behind $6 in exchange for the item. To make this clear, security footage captured Batista waving the bills in front of the camera. Police officers soon located Batista and charged him with breaking and entering. He has since posted $4,000 bond and will appear in court March 8th. No charges were filed against his friend, who never entered the store, WTLV reported. You know what? That's one expensive pack of cigarettes. I am out of here for today. Thank you all very much for joining me. Please go to theblacksphere.net. Kevin Jackson, myself, and a whole lot of other talented people have plenty of things there for your perusal and consideration. You can find me at renegadepoliticsblog.wordpress.com. Politics with a K. It's brand new. Check it out. Please, you can also still go to conservativecauldron.blogspot.com, facebook.com/BeckyNoble, and on Twitter at PatriotWitch. Thank you all very much for joining me today. Have a fabulous weekend, and I will see you next time.